I was stuck in that mindset of, but I have a degree. I really should be working in my degrees. And so I couldn't make the connection. So the imposter syndrome kicked in that you don't have the skill set to do this.
This is the Happen to Your Career podcast with Scott Anthony Barlow.
We help you stop doing work that doesn't fit you, figure out what does, and make it happen.
We help you define the work that is unapologetically you and then go get it.
If you feel like you were meant for more and you're ready to make a change, keep listening.
Here's Scott.
Here's Scott.
Here's Scott.
What happens when everything you thought that you wanted to do for a career isn't? You go to school, you get an education, maybe even a master's degree, and then realize immediately upon graduation that what you got your education in, it just isn't going to be your ideal career fit. So then what? Was it all a waste of time? How do we move into a new field? So many questions.
We all have that thing that no matter where you drop me, it doesn't matter if I work for this company, that company, if I work in nonprofit, if I work in for-profit, it doesn't matter if I'm working with my family or if I'm over here just volunteering. If you give me an opportunity to do that thing, that is my thing.
That's Amy Dickerson. Amy is a coach on our team and someone who made her own career change. She went to school for physical therapy, got her master's degree, never actually worked in that field. That's right, 7 years of schooling, and she never worked as a physical therapist. Why? Well, when she began looking for work after college, she quickly realized that her strengths were pulling her in a completely different direction. She knew that she wanted something different, but that didn't make the change easy. Amy struggled with untangling her identity from being a physical therapist, as well as major imposter syndrome when she was trying to enter this brand new field. Okay, fast forward, and Amy has now been a career coach for many, many years. She's got lots of wonderful experience. She's actually one of the few people that I know that has been doing coaching since before it was popular. She's an expert in helping people pinpoint their unique strengths and showing them how they've been unknowingly using those same strengths their entire life. As you can guess, she's also pretty amazing at helping people with detaching their identity from their careers and overcoming imposter syndrome. In our conversation, Amy uses her own career journey to explain how, even when you think you have no direction and you're wondering what's next, your strengths can still help you discover what you're really meant to be doing. So this is the point where we get to jump in. Here's my conversation with Amy. She's taking us back to a pretty pivotal point in her life when she realized she didn't want to be that physical therapist.
Well, my bachelor's degree is in health sciences and my master's degree is in physical therapy, actually, which is a very, very competitive program to get into. And an extremely challenging program. At the time that I actually went into school for it, it was you only went to the master's degree at that point. They eventually changed it to a doctorate the year after I graduated, which made complete sense because you went to medical school. No one told you that you were going to full-on medical school.
Yeah.
But as a physical therapist, you literally have to know everything that the doctors know. You have to be able to read x-rays, read MRIs, PET scans, all of that, because you have to do a separate evaluation than what the doctor does to confirm that what they believe they're seeing is what you see as well. So yeah, I had no idea I was going to full-on medical school. But if you think about it, physical therapy is a form of coaching. So I've always had that coaching thing in me. And it's ironic how I ended up coming right back around to coaching. I call it my story to Nineveh. If there's anyone out there who's ever read any biblical stories, one of the stories people tend to read is the story of Jonah and the great fish, or the whale, as some people refer to it, but it's the great fish. So in that story, God tells Jonah, hey, I want you to go to Tarshish and speak to the people and this and that. And Jonah's like, I'm going to Nineveh. So he went on over to Nineveh, did what he wanted to do, ended up being swallowed by this fish, praying to God, get me out of this situation, get spit out, gets himself together, and then finally is like, okay, I guess I'll go to Tarshish now. So as I grew up as a child, yeah. And you probably had a bit of this growing up too, where even as a kid, people will always come to you for advice. And as a child, you're just growing up, you're a kid. You're not thinking about what you're doing and all of that, or whatever. But I always had a keen awareness of problem solving, trying to find solutions to problems, because I always wanted to see people be happy about living life. I always, you know, had appreciation for the spiritual side of things and for the fact that if we made it here, then, hey, there's got to be a reason why we're here. So early in my life, I would have these philosophical problem-solving conversations. I mean, I'm 9 years old having conversations with adults. I was like, wait, what's going on here? But it continued, of course, as I grew. But one thing I didn't recognize about myself that I actually just learned about myself in the last 2 to 3 years,
yeah,
is that I'm an empath. So therefore, people's emotions, energies, all those things, they impact me. And I always knew that as a kid, but I didn't know it had an actual name. So I thought I was crazy. So I would never talk about the fact that I could move through a crowd and I would literally feel energy change, emotions, this yeah. and that. So because of that, when you're having conversations with people about life and things, whatever, for me being the empath, therefore I took on a lot of the emotions that they had. So for me, I emotionally invested sometimes more than the person themselves did. And because of that, over the years, it became heaviness, heaviness, heaviness. So by the time I graduated high school, I was like, I don't want to do anything that has to do with any form of counseling. I don't want to have counseling. So I completely just pushed it away. And slowly over years, I really had already started doing it. So I had decided years before that I like the idea of teaching and I kind of like the idea of being in the health space. And I had discovered physical therapy. So I decided, this seems like a really good fit. I think I'm going to go for physical therapy. So that's what I did. Once I went to college, started University of Michigan. Go Blue. That's right. Go Blue out there. And got a scholarship, but they didn't have my full major there. They didn't have physical therapy in Ann Arbor. So I had a plan to switch. I was going to use as much of my scholarship as possible and then switch to another school that had the program. And I ended up at Oakland University.
Yeah.
And that's where I got my degrees. So the year I graduated actually was the first year we had ever experienced a hiring freeze in physical therapy. Yeah.
Perfect.
That had never happened before. And it had been kind of moving across the country at the time. So right at the time we graduated, it was hitting Michigan. So when you graduate, of course, you don't graduate as a full therapist or full doctor. Whatever. You know, you always have to go take your exams, get your license, all that. So when I first graduated, I was trying to do things with my student license, but nobody was really hiring. And I just wasn't as well connected healthcare wise with people in my community. I just wasn't connected like that to be able to find someone who could help me make that kind of move. My sister, ironically, which I didn't even know when I chose physical therapy, my sister, who's 20 years older than me, she was an occupational therapist. I didn't even realize it. So she tried to help, whatever, but it was just a tough time. So basically, at a certain point, I was just kind of like, I'm exhausted from school. I'm exhausted from looking. I'm just exhausted. I'm going to just step back, take a break, and I'm just going to do a little temporary work and then come back around. So I went to the temporary field and just kind of worked here and there. And I ended up at what was at the time the leader in outplacement services, the company that actually began the outplacement industry. And for those who don't know what outplacement is, when people get laid off from their jobs, they end up getting connected to a company that will help to coach them and counsel them through that process to help them get their resume together, interviewing skills, networking skills, negotiating, all of that to help you move to your next position. So I ended up doing a temp stint there and really enjoyed it, connected really well with the staff, but I did my few weeks and then I was off. So So in a few months later, I decided to just reach out to the company just because I really enjoyed the people that I work with. And so I just sent an email. Hey, how are you guys doing? Blah, blah, blah. I got an email back that said, oh my gosh, we have been looking for you. Where are you? We have an open position and we want you. Get back here. So at that time, I was no longer working with the temporary HC. So I was like, oh, wow, this is amazing. So that's how I ended up getting connected into the world of outplacement, which then led me into career coaching. Although, again, in the beginning with that, I really didn't want to go into coaching, or at that time it was called consulting.
Yeah.
I really didn't want to be a consultant.
Tell me about that. What was it? Do you remember what was in your mind back then where you're like, I don't really want anything to do with this?
Yes, we actually have a name for it now. It's called imposter syndrome. We didn't have those words then. So here I, again, I am someone with a master's degree, and I just really loved the work that was being done. And so although I knew I had this degree, I just was drawn. So I didn't really care what I was doing there. So I came in the admin position initially, but my boss saw early on how I worked with the clients and how I helped them to really pinpoint what it is that their strengths were, what they really brought to the table for a company, and the way that I helped them to focus on those things. It really created a shift in them a little bit more quickly than he had been seeing with people, and giving them that confidence to be able to get back out there and to work that job search process. Because as you and I know, and probably some of the listeners know, looking for a job is a job. So you have to really get out there and be prepared for it. So after observing me, he came to me one day and said, hey, yeah, so I'm going to be sending you to consulting training. And I just jumped back. What? No.
Absolutely not.
Absolutely not. No, I don't want to be a consultant. No. And he said, oh, yeah, you're going and you're going to training. And it was kind of like the way he said it was like, oh, wow, there's no arguing here. He's going to make me go. And he did. And I did complete the training. But like you said, that first reaction, I think because I looked at the other actual consultants, and these were people who had been working in corporate America for 10, 15, sometimes 20 years. These were people who had held certain levels of executive positions. They may have been people who have worked in HR. And so looking at that, and then comparing my background, although I have this amazing degree that was extremely difficult to get and it's highly respected, it wasn't this particular field per se. And so for me, I didn't initially connect the coaching aspect, the teaching aspect, the training aspect that I had developed, the observation skills that I had developed in physical therapy. I didn't exactly initially translate that to what was being done with career consulting, which is ironic because that's one of my very key traits. When I help people, it's one of the things that I'm able to do. I'm able to see those kind of hidden ties between where they are and where they want to be. So it's so crazy that I couldn't do it for myself.
So let me ask you about that.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that if we go back for a little bit, I fully understand what you're saying that, hey, I couldn't see this for myself. I couldn't pull this together for myself, which absolutely understand. We all, almost all of us have that blind spot for ourselves until we can connect it together externally, or we have somebody else's help to connect it for us in one way or another. So I get that part. What I'm curious about though is, At the time, do you think that person who sent you to the training and everything, do you think they saw that and that's part of the reason why they chose to do that?
100%. He told me 100% that he could see that my ability to be able to do those things and see that in other people. And also just my natural propensity to ask the questions once people told me I really would like to do this. I really would like to change this. I would just always in my life, even when I was younger, yeah. I would just start asking questions. Well, what is it exactly that you want to do? Well, what do you have now that you think connects with that? Why is it that you want to go in that direction? What do you feel like is moving you? And so on and so forth. And so I was doing this because it was just my natural talent, but I didn't know, I didn't recognize it as a talent and as a
that is this a, yeah, this is actually a thing that other people don't normally do.
I had no clue. And so because I didn't see those things, again, I wasn't able to see how I connected. So therefore, like I was just mentioning, that whole imposter syndrome, you know, I couldn't look at my natural skill set. I was thinking of things in terms only of education. Hmm. Now, I'm Gen X. I don't know about you, but I'm Gen X. So Gen X, we're the generation that is the transitional generation. We saw how things used to be. We lived through certain transitions and we saw where things were going. And so there were a lot of things told to us about, if you did this, then this will happen. It was it was like computers before computers, that if then statement, the go-to. If you see this, go to that, you know that.
Yep.
So growing up in that, there was a certain expectation. And part of that was you go to college. So during that time period, it was really pushed for us to go and get higher education. And so because of that, I was stuck in that mind frame, that mindset of, but I have a degree. I really should be working in my degrees. And so I couldn't make the connection. So the imposter syndrome kicked in that you don't have the skill set to do this. You don't have the capabilities. Yeah, you've been talking to people, but, and yeah, you're able to look at these resumes. And yes, you've helped several people get jobs, but no, you don't have these skills.
This is one of my favorite, and also I think still to this day is one of the most fascinating things. And I know you've seen this too, not just for yourself, but for other people that you've worked with. Mm-hmm. The idea that the skill sets or the potential or whatever else it is there, but the only difference is that we can't see it in one way or another. And I think that for a lot of our listeners and clients shows up in the questions that we get over and over again, where it's like, how do I take my existing experience and then convince other people to be able to accept this experience in a new industry or new whatever else? And what I find is it's in some ways, although it's a very different line of thinking, and it comes from sometimes this imposter syndrome type of thing that we can't necessarily see about ourselves, it's actually in some ways like the wrong question. I think a better question is like, how do you go forward even though it's uncomfortable, and what, even though you can't see necessarily everything for yourself or see how it relates, how do you just uncover the pieces that relate so that you can get to where you want to go in one way or another?
Yeah. Yes. So
just curious your thoughts on that set of ideas.
Well, let me just say, to me, that's one of the hallmark reasons why the expression, everyone needs a coach, is so real. Everyone needs a coach in some form or fashion, because part of it is the environment built around you. You're so used to moving in that space, and you've invested so much time, effort, belief, faith, this, yeah, in these things, that it's not so easy to begin to pivot and to look at things in another way, in a different direction, and believe that you can head in a different direction. You know, there's so much of a big deal made about how much money you spent to go to school to get that skill. There's so much made about when you work at the corporation and you've worked there for 15 years. And if you just hang in there another 15 years.
Just another 15 years. Just most retire of a lifetime.
That's how it used to be, right?
Yeah.
You retire with the gold watch and the plaque and the this and the that. And anyway, the point is that we have a lot of other voices that are telling us how we should think about our situation. But what we don't realize sometimes is that those other voices, that they're speaking those things because they actually are admiring the way that you're thinking, but they're scared. Just like you have a little fear, they're a little scared too. Mm-hmm. And so they, if they care about you, then they want the best for you. So they think in terms of safety and security. And because of lived life experiences, there's automatically the thought of do it this way, do it this way, and do it this way. Don't do it this way, don't do it that. But part of what people are leaving out about this is that we're built as individuals with certain things that are in us from the beginning. It's just built in us. And I believe, and the way I talk about it is that we all have a function in life. We all have that thing that no matter where you drop me, it doesn't matter if I work for this company, that company, if I work in nonprofit, if I work in for profit, it doesn't matter if I'm working with my family or if I'm over here just volunteering. If you give me an opportunity to do that thing, that is my thing. The thing that no matter where I go, no matter what I do, somehow or another, I always find myself heading in this direction. I always end up volunteering if there's an opportunity. I always end up, you know, someone asking me to use my skill. That thing, I call it your function. So no matter where you drop the person, at some point, they're going to start moving in their function. So if we start focusing on that thing that's within us, we're automatically, again, going to get pulled and drawn toward the things that align with that. You know, it's like when we look at a magazine, we pick up a magazine and we're flipping through pages. We always stop on some page because it's interesting to us. There's something on that page that draws us that we want more of. We want to read more about. We want to know more about. So it's like that. We're going to get drawn to it. So I think that there's a lot of just fear and trepidation that people deal with this. And so that's why having a coach is so helpful, because the coach has no investment in how you turn out beside being successful, achieving the goal that you set out to do. You know, they're not your mother or your father, whereas they need you to look a certain way so that they feel a little bit of success and pride. They're not your friends who need you to work in a certain field so that you can make a certain level of money so you can do all the things that they want to do too, and you can be on our level. We don't have as coaches that other thing that we need you to go a certain way. Where do you want to go? What do you feel is drawing you? What do you feel like is moving you, pushing you, calling you? That's what we're going to help you to uncover and get there. And that's all that makes a difference for us.
I think that is a rarity in many people's lives to have that, let's call it unbiased. That's not quite the word I'm looking for, but unbiased person who is really just there to amplify your goals and your wants and your desires and, you know, all the things, whether it's career or otherwise. And I'll say that, and you and I haven't had this conversation before, this part of the conversation before, but I use that as a strategy for every area of my life. So I have a therapist, I have a trainer, I have a set of coaches for various different areas that are coordinated with every single one of my goals. So they're not all coaches necessarily, but they are people that are there to help amplify what it is that I'm trying to accomplish in the world. And it is, oh my goodness. In some cases, it literally makes whatever it is that I'm trying to accomplish any given time or any given year possible. In other cases, it just makes it far, far easier, or allows me to see the things that I can't see or never would even imagine for myself, especially in the area for, like, I don't know, health as an example.
Yes. Say that again. It's the thing that I would have never imagined for myself.
Yeah.
You know, and that's where it makes the difference, is that sometimes people can even see, imagine, feel, but they just don't really believe it's realistic. And the environment around them sometimes doesn't support that either. So what you just discussed about, I have a coach for this and a coach for that, and maybe it's not a formal quote unquote coach, but that's the role that person is
in. I have a person, I have a team, I have a someone that is actively helping me propel this forward in every single area.
Propel. And it's the secret that people are not, it's the secret that somehow or another is getting past us in our lives, because we start off with coaches in our lives. Our parents are our first coaches, mm-hmm. our family members, teachers. Of course, obviously, if you play sports, you have an actual titled coach. But we have these people in our lives all along. And then somehow or another, we get to adulthood. And then it's like the world is like, okay, let all that concept go. And you get out there and you pull yourself up by your bootstraps. And you get out there. And
you know everything. You do everything by yourself. You just somehow like are, yes, agreed. It's this really odd dichotomy in many different ways. It's just, it doesn't make any sense when we talk about it like that. However, it is how we functionally operate sometimes in society. But I want to go back and ask you about something here, because, you know, that speaking of the word functionally, you had talked about like the function, and often we'll refer to that here on the podcast is the truest sense of you, or what we often will call signature strengths. And I wanted to ask you about some of yours that have showed up, because definitely, you know, you're talking about when you were a kid and you're having philosophical discussions with other people, that's not normal. And that's wonderful. No. Like that's like, I, as a kid, I remember I was a weird kid, but I remember different points in time, just like crying because I was like 7 or 8 years old. And it's like, there's only so much time left in the world. And like, who does that as a kid? It's like a 7 or 8 year old kid, right? Yeah. So I think that what's really fascinating is looking for those significant differences that even show up so young sometimes. And for you, let's talk about a couple of those examples. Let's take empathy and being an empath and being able to really sense and respond at a different level to other people's emotions, feelings, and emotional needs. Mm-hmm. And I think that what I heard you say earlier is that like, there was a point in time where like, that was a thing that was happening and I couldn't control, didn't even recognize that this was a thing that I could do. And it just felt like this massive burden. And often we'll call that the shadow side or the dark side, or sometimes even anti-strengths, but the shadow side of your strengths. So I'm curious, what happened along the way for you to recognize that, nope, this is actually a strength. This is actually a wonderful thing about me that allows me to, you know, live out my function, as you called it.
Yes. Well, I will say I always knew, even as a child, I always knew that it was a strength. However, because no one else talked about this kind of thing, I thought something was wrong with me. But as you said, I had no control over it. You know, it just was what it was. It was who I am. And again, like you said, because I'm getting into these conversations and things, and I saw people get results from the conversations we would have, I knew that it wasn't a bad thing. I knew that it was a positive thing. I felt like it was definitely a God-given thing, because again, I had no control over it.
Do you remember one of those times? I'm curious, like where you had one of those conversations, and then it's like, oh, this is real. Like they're getting something out of this. What's the first time you remember that?
Well, I will say one thing that comes to my mind is something that will happen commonly as a teenager.
Yeah,
you know, as a teenager, trying to get along sometimes with your parents. Not so easy.
As it turns out.
And so I will have friends, of course, and we'd get into these conversations. Somehow or another, I could always see past the teenager view of things. And somehow I could see the parent more as an individual person than just playing this parent role. And so because of that, there was always an awareness for me that sometimes when someone was dealing with a difficult parent or difficult situations, because the parents maybe had difficult situations that they've been dealing with either actively right now in this moment.
Yeah.
Or as they grew up or something, and it has impacted how they respond to situations, to words. I was always very aware of words and how you had to be careful sometimes in the specific word you would choose with someone. You could still get the message across, but some words would inflame people. It would set them off. We call them now trigger words. You know, somehow I had a sense of that. So I would try to talk to my friends sometimes in a sense to help them kind of see that your parent could just be reacting because of other things that are going on. And being at home, it's just easier to blow up at home and survive that than to blow up on the job. And so that was the idea that I always had. So it helps my friends sometimes be able to calm down when things would happen. And I will even share with my own situation with that. So my mother, and she's been gone for 9 years now, but my mother coming up, she wasn't necessarily a lovey-dovey mother. She wasn't the hug you, kiss you, all that kind of type, whatever, which of course now I have become, my porcelain. I've become that. But I was very aware that she cared and she was here to make sure that I was taken care of. I'm the last of seven children. My parents had seven children. So, you know, she just wasn't that kind of person. And sometimes I'd look around at other kids and I'd see that in their parents and their relationships. And it used to be like, wow, I wonder why doesn't she kind of feel that way? And I something within me always knew that, well, it's not my fault. Because, you know, sometimes as a kid, you'll take that on and you'll think, mm-hmm. What did I do? What did I this? What did I? And so, but somehow or another, I had a sense of, it's not my fault. Not sure why, not sure what happened, but it's not my fault. And she didn't talk a lot about her past and growing up or whatever. But there were some things that when she would say something that gave me the idea that there were definitely some challenges and some things that even tragedies. So anyway, when I got to U of M, I remember one particular time going home and just a little bit of there was just something there where she seemed almost upset with me that I'm getting this opportunity. I don't know. It was just something weird. And when I got back to campus, I really spent some time thinking about it. And something that came to me was, you know, just that, you know, maybe she didn't get all the love that she needed to get as she grew up. And so therefore, she doesn't know what she was never taught. If she wasn't taught it, she doesn't know how to give that out in that way. So I decided at that point that I was going to let go of whatever anger and whatever I had against her. And instead, I was going to give her all the love that she should have received that she didn't.
I love that.
So when I would start going back home, I would start hugging her. I would start kissing her on the cheek. I would start teasing her. I would do things like just sit in her lap, lay all back on her, whatever. She would just start laughing like, oh my gosh, if you don't get all of this off of me. But so from there and over the years, as we, you know, as I continue to grow up and we both continue to grow, we eventually, our relationship changed and we end up having a really, really great relationship. And my mother passed when she was 82. And about a year before she passed, she said to me one day, I was at the house because she'd been going through illness for a couple of years at that point. And she said to me, you know, just that, I really thank God for you. I really, truly don't know what I would do without you. And I was so shocked and taken aback. I didn't know what to say. And she just said, I mean it. I really don't know what I would do if I hadn't had you. And I couldn't respond. You know, even now it's like, okay, keep it together, Amy, on the podcast. Don't melt. But, you know, it definitely was kind of like, oh, thank God that I made that change and I had that awareness. So again, things like that I would do over the years and help people with. But again, I didn't really see it as a skill or as a special talent or gift. It was just something that was just me and that I would share.
I love that. Let me ask you this, with our about 60 seconds or so left here. What advice would you have for other people that want to find that special talent or, again, what we'll often call signature strengths, and really want to begin to transition to using that in not just more areas of their life, but particularly their career?
Yes. Well, knowing your signature strengths then helps you to be able to understand where those strengths would be valued. So that's the first thing I would say is to begin to, hey, of course, reach out to a career coach, but reach out and do a little research, read online, take some assessments and just see where do we typically see where those strengths are really a positive and help to move business, help to move people, help to move situations forward because of that skill set. And when you kind of connect to that, that will begin to open up your mindset and your world, your options on what you do that you really bring that someone somewhere would benefit for. A person, a company, whatever. So I would say look further into that and really see how you can, you know, we use the expression lean in. But yeah, what professions will allow you to lean into that and utilize that? And as you get a chance to do more and more of it, you'll begin to grow and flower out with those strengths. And then you'll begin to see how your very strengths, whatever you consider your quote unquote weaknesses, you'll actually begin to see how your strengths can help bolster those and support you to continue to grow, because that's what it's all about. In our time here, it's about growth and continued growth.
Most of the episodes you've heard on Happen to Your Career showcase stories of people that have taken the steps to identify and land careers that they are absolutely enamored with, that match their strengths and are really what they want in their lives. If that's something that you're ready to begin taking steps towards, that's awesome. And we want to figure out how we can help. So here's what I would suggest. Take the next 5 seconds to open up your email app and email me directly. I'm going to give you my personal email address, scott@happentoyourcareer.com. Just email me and put conversation in the subject line. And when you do that, I'll introduce you to someone on our team who can have a super informal conversation with, and we'll figure out the very best type of help for you, whatever that looks like, and the very best way that we can support you to make it happen. So send me an email right now with conversation in the subject line. Here's a sneak peek into what we have coming up in store for you next week. Today, it's just you and me talking about how to find the time to make a career change, even when you are insanely busy. And the reason that we've wanted to do this type of episode for a really long time is this is one of the biggest things that stops people again and again and again. If you are wanting to make a career change, finding the time, making the time, prioritizing the time, those sound like they should be easy, and we all know they're not. And I don't want you to have to feel bad when it isn't easy. And instead, I wanted to be able to give you some ways to be able to find that time, take back that time, and do something about it here. All that and plenty more next week right here on Happen to Your Career. Make sure that you don't miss it. And if you haven't already, click subscribe on your podcast player so that you can download this podcast in your sleep and you get it automatically. Even the bonus episodes every single week, sometimes multiple times a week. Until next week, adios. I'm out.